This is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Lori Elster, and this is the All Access Star Trek podcast. Today we have a special guest. We have Matt from the Shuttle Pod joining us to talk about Discovery's first two episodes and all the news. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So we are very excited because Star Trek Discovery is finally back. They put up two episodes. We are going to review both of them. But first, we're going to talk news. And we got to start with some business news because it's my favorite.
Well, but things haven't happened, but they're like.
Yeah, there are a lot of headlines just today.
This is the most excitement, you know, on this front, I think, in years.
But we're kind of back to where it started. So I think late last year, it was reported that Paramount and Skydance were talking about merging.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's been other suitors and ups and downs. And I think last time we had Brian on, we talked about the deal with Apollo, which would be done through Legendary Entertainment. But it seems like the Skydance deal is now very close to happening. They're in what's called exclusive negotiating, so they're not allowed to even talk to Apollo. Apparently, this is Wall Street Journal and others are reporting that Apollo upped their bid to $26 billion for all of Paramount, and Paramount still said no.
Yeah, that's a ludicrous amount of money, by the way, don't you think? That's
crazy. Well, I mean, I don't want to get it. You know, when you talk about the enterprise value of the company, it is actually worth close to that. You know, it's just got debt problems.
Is it carrying a lot of debt, though? Yeah, I was going
to say. Yeah. So it's not insane, but you know, the fact that they're still sticking with Skydance means Skydance probably is offering more. If not, there'd be shareholder lawsuits because you can't reject a better bid just because you feel like it. So in 30 days from now, Paramount could be changing hands or at least starting the process. It takes a while.
Takes
regulators, yada, yada, yada. The stock jumped up. Then it went down a little bit because some technical stuff, which I'm not going to get into because it'll bore the shit out of everyone. But
thank you, Tony.
So we're back to Skydance. They're still backed by private equity, just like the other deal was. But people are like, well, they've had a better relationship with Paramount.
That's what I was just going to say. I think that's the difference. They have a good relationship with Skydance.
Yeah, David Ellison, he's not going to sell it for parts. But that being said, if they take over all of Paramount, I wouldn't be surprised if they sell off big pieces, like even like CBS. Some people think this is going to lead to the Viacom CBS split up that we saw before where Star Trek was owned and it was confusing. I don't see that happening. Yeah.
Considering that they have, as a whole, they have three or four really big franchises that they now have. You know, you think about Mission Impossible, Star Trek, Transformers, things like that. They're not going to want to let those get fragmented again. No one in their right mind is going to want that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
in the end, I think this is going to be a good thing. We still don't know what would happen with Paramount Plus, and so much is tied to Paramount Plus, obviously. I still think some version of it will survive, probably merged with other services.
That almost seems inevitable, because it's just an industry trend that everybody they went crazy with the streaming. Reality is hitting.
Right. Well, they went crazy into a million different streamers that now are like, oh, we really need to combine.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Because people are not going to, a lot of people don't want to subscribe to 15 different streaming services.
No. I mean, we've already seen Disney through buying Fox and buying the piece owned by Comcast. Now, Hulu is now inside of Disney Plus.
Yeah, not 100%, but yeah.
For the most part. You know, these kinds of consolidations are already happening and there'll be more of it. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that. Another story we're about to talk about, which this is kind of related to. So, you know, through all the disco publicity, Alex Kurtzman ended up talking a little bit about kind of the bigger picture of the franchises. And one of the things he said is if he could magically greenlight Legacy, he would.
He said it's beyond his pay grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the phrase he used.
Which makes sense because really, you know, in to sort of simplify it, he's basically just a contractor producing these things for the Viacom CBS, you know, enterprise, right? So in a sense, he does have bosses. right? I mean,
they decide
CBS Studios and Paramount Plus.
He kind of decides what to bring to the table for them to say yes or no to, you know, but he knows that he can't bring Legacy to the table because there's not enough money. And, you know, one of the issues with Paramount being the way it is, it's beyond Star Trek. Like, you know, directors and actors, that they're having difficulty attracting talent and other things and borrowing money. They're junk bond. They're now at junk bond status. So, you know, all in all, it's difficult for them to do big things now. They'd still green light movies and stuff. So they're not doing anything. But I think once a deal like this is in place, it'll be easier to make big money decisions about Star Trek's future, because Legacy is a big money thing. I still think a Legacy movie is more likely than a Legacy season one green light, at least in the next couple years.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that can be so testing too. The waters TV movie. And then, you know,
yeah, I mean, they'll also see how Section 31 does, because that'll be like the first streaming Star Trek movie.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about that, though, is it probably cost tens of millions, if not. I mean, they use the disco sets redressed, which would be, you know, for Legacy, it'd be difficult for them to, let's say they tried to shoot it during a Strange New Worlds hiatus. And they're like, well, feel free to use the Strange New World sets.
You can't. It's totally, you know,
yeah, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but even if you redress them, you know, is that enough? You know,
it's
but
that
then you're back to starting from scratch, and then you run into money trouble again. Anyway, this is in the weeds. But now Alex did, the thing is, like, but he's saying, oh, but there's some surprises coming. Yep. Like beyond Section 31, beyond Starfleet Academy.
Which he'd hinted at New York Comic Con also.
Yeah, he's teased this idea that there's something in the back burner a few times recently.
I'm sure there are things, but can you imagine a world where they announced a live-action drama Star Trek show that wasn't Legacy? Like, these surprises, I don't think could be, oh, here's another, like, here's a show with Jay. But it could maybe be a miniseries, maybe a new animated thing.
Didn't he in another interview imply that they're thinking about more like streaming movies, right? That they have ideas for a few more.
Yeah.
So that could be the couple of surprises, is like, hey, we've got some more ideas.
I think Lower Decks is done with 5. I think that's it.
Hit 5, yeah. That's sad, but reasonable.
If they end Lower Decks, they'll probably want to do another animated Star Trek show.
I would think so. Legacy, the animated series.
Yeah. Or maybe it's, you know, the Nick Meyer audio drama. I mean, which isn't a surprise. The surprise is it's in limbo. It's neither dead or alive. You know,
right.
It's just, perhaps it'd be surprising if it's still alive.
That's what I was going to say. I'd be more surprised if it's actually alive at this point.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I feel like we hear something that's like, oh, yeah, they're doing something. But it's been a long time. So we do have a little bit of news on that Section 31 movie. Streaming movie, which is a little clarity. It's not even, I wouldn't actually, clarity's generous. But that photo that we all saw in Variety that was like Georgiou with this weird person with devices on their head. How would you describe that even?
Yeah, it's like a cybernetic faux hawk or something going on.
There you go. Cybernetic faux hawk. Perfect. So now we have the character's name. I couldn't tell you how to pronounce it. Dada.
Oh, I think it's just that way you think it is. I think it's Dada No. Yeah.
Dada No. Dada Noe.
And we know it's played by this, you know, Canadian actor named Joe Pingay, who's been in a bunch of stuff, is one of those people you probably barely recognize.
Especially with his cybernetic fauxhawk.
Right. He was not one of the actors in the original 7 they announced. He's one of the kind of ones we learned about later. So I think this is not a major character.
No, I agree. I think it's just some cool looking dude that they could use for a shot that's safe.
Yeah, it's probably one or two scenes kind of thing. But.
Right. But it's the only other character we've heard about other than Rachel Garrett.
Right.
I mean, there's still the theory of those other 6. Could they all be playing known characters? I bet some are.
Castillo?
Oh, yeah. I guess that would be the obvious, like, if Rachel Garrett's there. But yeah.
Well, but it's a younger Rachel Garrett, probably before she's on the Enterprise C.
I know, but.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe one of them is Harriman. You know, maybe she's collecting Enterprise captains.
Oh, my.
The lesser known Enterprise
captain. Yeah, exactly. So that means there has to be a joke about, being installed on Tuesday, and all that stuff. Yeah.
I think she should go get that poor, even though it wasn't the Enterprise, that poor Vulcan captain who was supposed to take over Discovery.
Yeah.
He's still there. He's
still waiting. Poor guy.
And he's like, oh, they're considered, destroyed. Oh.
Good thing I didn't take that ship.
Yeah, good thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be like a, kind of like the Chief O'Brien comic strip. It's just this Vulcan sitting at the spaceport every week, calmly, serenely waiting.
Waiting for Discovery.
Speaking of Strange New Worlds, have we mentioned it? Let's just use that as a transition. I will speak of it.
Ready? Strange New Worlds.
There we go. It was nominated for a couple of Hugo Awards, which is pretty cool.
For my two favorite episodes of the whole series.
The Big Swing episodes.
Yeah.
Well, I think they think all the episodes are Big Swing episodes. But Subspace Rhapsody and Those Old Scientists, which are truly my two favorites, the ones I've rewatched the most and enjoy so much, they're both nominated. And Bill Wolkoff is a writer on both, which is nice.
I mean, the Hugo Awards, like, I will read a book if it's a Hugo Award winner. Yeah, I've always thought of the Hugo Awards as a super cool thing. It's like you think of Isaac Asimov and, all these, Harlan Ellison. So to me, I don't get why they nominated Subspace Rhapsody, because sure, it's fun and cool, but it's not a good sci-fi episode. The sci-fi premise was stupid. It was just an excuse for them to sing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, like, there's better science fiction in Strange New World season two, but they went for the shiny objects, the Lower Decks crossover and the singing episode. So, but good luck to them. And I hope they win.
Yeah, me too. Voting starts in April, and then the winners will be announced in August at the World Science Fiction Convention in Glasgow. We'll have a person on the scene. No, we won't.
I mean, getting two nominations in the same year is a pretty – I mean, Star Trek's had a few nominations. Disco's been nominated. Lower Decks was nominated. I think was Picard nominated. I can't remember.
I can't remember, yeah.
But I think the last actual Star Trek to win was Next Gen series finale. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a long time.
I mean, I do think there's a tendency to split the vote when you have a category like this, and especially these two episodes.
So what else is out there?
Newsy. We got a little Pluto TV news for everybody, which is that they've actually created a dedicated channel for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, in addition to the two channels they already have that show Star Trek.
This was kind of surprising to me, but happy surprise. I like Deep Space Nine.
So now they have three channels. So correct me if I'm wrong here. So they had the regular Star Trek channel, which had already been showing TOS and Next Gen, and so that hasn't changed. The more Star Trek channel was playing DS9 and Voyager.
Right.
So now the more Star Trek channel is just playing Voyager, but they haven't renamed it the Voyager channel.
I don't know. Is it just playing Voyager or is it doing a mishmash?
It's just playing Voyager.
Oh.
So maybe they're going to add Enterprise, because otherwise they should have just renamed it Voyager, right?
Yeah, that makes me think, yeah, you're right. The Enterprise is going to get worked in there. That's the only thing missing from, like, the, as they say, legacy Trek shows.
Yeah, a little Paramount Global synergy. I mean, Pluto is a huge win for Paramount Global.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. To go back to, like, we were talking about streaming consolidation, what's not a problem is ad-supported services. People are watching the free ad-supported services like crazy, and Pluto TV is one of the big ones.
Well, and Pluto's also putting together things that make sense. Like, here's a game show channel, and here's your Star Trek channel. And so it's getting, they know how to lure in an audience.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They're doing a good job with that.
Let's see. I think, is that?
We have a little weird news. That's the topic.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, the weird one.
Which is that the, why don't you take this one, Matt?
Oh, well, this is actually all Tony, though. he's the one who investigated it. So,
well, I didn't find this. So I actually saw
the one who bought the replies. So
some people on Reddit noticed that when Sweden was inducted into NATO in March, there was a ceremony. You had the prime minister of Sweden and the crown princess and the head of NATO. And it was like this huge event. And everyone's standing there and at the Brussels headquarters and people are about to raise the flag and the band strikes up music and it's the theme of Star Trek First Contact.
Yay. And then the Borg arrived like 10 minutes later.
But they're definitely not Swedish. Okay.
And they only played that theme. Later in the program, they played the anthem for Sweden, which makes sense. So I'm like, well, why? Like, that doesn't, you know, that's funny, but... So I reached out to NATO, and I'm like,
one of my favorite things about you is that you'll go, let's reach out to NATO. So you did.
Actually, I reached out to a couple areas within NATO, and, you know, shockingly, they replied. It's fun getting these emails from Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers Europe, Head of Operations. Unclassified, you know, and I'm like, oh, this seems serious, you know. And then the guy's like, well, I, you know, that wasn't our band. We think that's the Belgian military band. And then he signs off, live long and prosper, which was really cool. And then eventually the NATO spokesman reached out and said that they're fans of Jerry Goldsmith, you know, and that was basically that.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Perfectly understandable.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's fun. And you know, you never know what's going to pop. I mean, this is probably the biggest story we had for March because people just get a kick out of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I mean, NATO is a heck of a lot like what would be the UFP in the future. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
we all like that idea. Yeah. Or Starfleet.
The idea of it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of all fitting, right? That, yeah.
Of course, people were thinking that they did this just because the
Swedish joke.
The Swedish joke in the movie, yeah. Which is, you know, it's possible.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, somebody could have thought that. Who knows?
Sure. Sounds Swedish. The Borg. Anyway, we got a kick out of that.
Yeah, it's funny.
Let's talk a little bit Star Trek Discovery before we do the review.
Sure.
Lori, you were at the premiere event.
I was. They had a premiere in New York City on like the most crazy, rainstormy, horrific weather day that you could possibly imagine. And bonus, all the subways that go near that theater shut down.
Jeez.
It was crazy. And getting there was terrible. But everybody did it. Somehow we all got there, drenched, umbrellas inside out. Here we go. But it was a really nice, fun, wonderful evening that totally made up for all the craziness trying to get there. So Sonequa Martin-Green and Wilson Cruz walked the black carpet. We kept calling it the black alert carpet.
Yeah.
She'd come straight from Colbert, looking beautiful, of course. Nice.
Yeah.
And so there are a bunch of us on the carpet. There was Julian from Strange New Pod and Sci-Fi Sisters. We were like the non-mainstream representatives. And there was like everyone else, there were like Getty people and photo people. And then one other group interviewing, I think it was AP or something, doing interviews. And then they screened the first two episodes for a whole bunch of fans, which was amazing. Like, we did the interviews and they were, you know, Wilson and Sonequa are just absolutely wonderful to talk to, and they're so warm and friendly, and they give everybody all the time that they need. And then I was debating going into the screening because I was like, well, I've already seen the episode so many times, whatever. And I went in and sat down, and that was it. I was like, I am staying. Like, it's so...
Because it's for the audience, the feeling.
It's gorgeous on the big screen. All the stuff I don't see on my TV is right there on a huge big screen. And the audience reaction was fantastic. Like, people laughing, clapping, gasping, like having such strong reactions to things. It was just, and so many people I know there too, so that was really nice. But it was and apparently Wilson Cruz stayed for quite a while. I think he watched a bunch of it. She ran off because she was doing the morning shows, so I'm sure she just wanted to get to bed. And it was sort of funny, like on the way, I'll just add this, on the way home, I ran into a friend of my daughter's who came with her mom. I had helped them get tickets to go. And so I have this mom and daughter, and I was like, I need to talk to, you know, the norms, like people who watch Star Trek but don't write about it or look for news stories on it. And I started grilling them, and the mom is the huge Discovery fan.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so funny, but it was really fun hearing them talk about it, and they really enjoyed the experience. And they said Paramount Plus put on a great event for them. Like, they got foam hands and keychains and free popcorn and the whole dealio.
Did you keep your Discovery popcorn box?
I didn't get the popcorn because they had to stop the interviews, take Sonequa and Wilson upstairs to introduce the screening, and then bring them back down to finish interviews. So by the time I went up, all the popcorn was gone.
Yeah.
Paramount brought Jackie Cox. Right. Interviews with them for Paramount Social, you know, for all of that. And that was fun. They love her, so they had fun talking to her. And she was very nice. Like, everybody was just chatting and kind of hanging around. The thing is, there's such a strong sense of community there, too. Like, all of us who were there ended up taking pictures of each other doing interviews and then later going, here, I have a picture of you talking to this person.
Oh, like, that's so sweet.
It was like everybody did it. I got them. I sent them. It was funny.
That's really nice to know, you know? It's like big Shrek community.
So we have one clip I think we're going to play, right?
Well, yeah. Sonequa talking a little bit about Raynor, specific to some of the issues in episode 2 of how, which I hadn't even thought of this until you asked this question. I think it was fascinating.
Yeah, it was a good question to ask.
You know, just think about Callum again for a second. Like, it's very unusual in a show to see a black woman, younger black woman, leading an older white man and teaching him something. And I'm wondering if you've thought of that.
Oh, I loved that. You know, that's something that we talked about, me and the other writers. Well, I'm not a writer on the show, but me and the other producers and Michelle Paradise, our showrunner, and Alex Kurtzman as well, was that we felt that that we had reached a point where it was time for Burnham to be the mentor. And the Saru leaving, Saru going off to fulfill his own destiny, his own purpose, had a lot to do with that, because he was a sort of guide and a voice of reason in that way. And his exit marked the beginning of Burnham being ready to be someone else's guide, someone else's mentor, and being able to give Captain Raynor a second chance was huge. That's a big part of why Burnham is able to lead from the center out and why she's able to nurture people to be their best selves, because of everything that she's been through, because of the mistakes and the moral failures and the victories as well. And so I really loved that we sort of flipped it on its head and earned it at the same time. We didn't just do it to do it. We earned it. And Burnham saw herself in Raynor, even though he was this older white man. And he struggled to listen, but he was humbled through the experience as well, which could be a path that people could see moving forward, you know?
You know, it's while she was talking was about something else was what made me think to dig into the racial issues in that relationship, because it is very unusual. So, and she connected with the question immediately.
I mean, it was obvious, you know, in episode 2, and we'll talk about this soon enough, of the second chances issue, of how Saru gave her a second chance, she was giving him a second chance. But I hadn't, like, put together, yeah, it is kind of a big deal when you look at them, even though he's not really a white guy. He's an alien. But
we know the actors.
He is a white guy. Yeah, an older white guy. Too. Yeah. That is an interesting dynamic as well.
Right. And I think her point is like that we need to see all that the TV viewers need to see this, which I agree with. I mean, I think it was her interview. Was it the one on The View? Maybe I forget. One of the recent interviews she did where she talked about a fan, which was like a white man who had written to her that he saw himself in her.
Right.
And that it helped sort of change the way he was looking at race and opening up conversations in his family. And so I think this is along those lines. I mean, plus their dynamic is great. I mean, I wanted to talk to her about him because I think their chemistry's terrific.
Yeah, this season kind of wouldn't work if they didn't have that.
Yeah. All right, so it's time to review Star Trek Discovery Episode 501, Red Directive.
Let's start with what everyone thought of it. I thought it was a great season opener. I feel it reset the show for a new season. It just kind of changed things up. while at the same time it set up everyone's arc, or almost everyone's arc. And I had to do a bit of business moving people around because people were in different positions at the end of season four, and they had to kind of shuffle things, as it were. So I really liked it.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought it was a great way to kick off the new season that they give you. In fact, it opens on the shot with this peaceful moment, and then boom, you're right in the action. And yeah, I mean, do they sort of cheat it by going 4 hours earlier? But they the message they wanted to send would have not been sent had they opened the season with them drinking in that scene where they're all at the party, right?
Right.
They're trying to tell you this is going to be action. It's going to be fun. And then as soon as we don't get danger, because Burnham is like having a whoop of joy while she's doing it, and the special effects are great. And you're right. They set up arcs for a whole bunch of the characters already and introduced a great new one.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed it. One thing that I would say Discovery has not failed to do for the last few seasons is set up, like, their first episodes of the new seasons have been awesome, right? Like,
yes.
301 was very good, 401 was very good. And so now, you know, they don't always pay off, but they know how to start really well.
301 is one of my favorite episodes of the whole series. Yeah.
It's, I mean, 301, of course, is that pivotal point where they've jumped to the future. So it was really important to nail that. And then, I mean, like Tony, you said, this is yet again kind of a new tone, which I think has happened in every season now, almost, like, in a good way, though. Like, 301 was a definite change, 401. And now here again, you know, a new mission that's different. Yeah, Rainer was great, right? Like, so
very.
Real brought some good, you know, you says who kind of energy, right? Like, just because you're Michael Burnham, I don't listen to you kind of energy, which is good, right? I mean, that needs to be there.
Well, except, and we'll get into this later, I think he does, and that's part of what makes him work also. Is that he does when,
but he doesn't immediately say yes.
Right, exactly. Right. Like, he's going to come in conflict and not just think that everything she does is. Oh,
she overtly says she doesn't like him. You know, when they're doing the desert race later, what does she say? Says, "I haven't disliked someone like this in 900 years."
Yeah,
or
that's
exactly
right.
What she says.
So it's clear they don't like each other. You know, if they're going to be best friends by the end of the season, I'm sure, or kill each other. But one thing that I think the doing the jump from the action back to the party, because when they jumped to the party, it took me a second to realize this wasn't the same party as the end of season four, right?
Yeah,
which kind of ended with Michael in her dress uniform and people, it was kind of a celebration kind of thing. And I was
although
like,
that was on the ship, I think.
Well, this was also, it was kind of unclear where it was. I mean, you know, it's 2 years ago. As I said before, rewatch the finale to kind of get your brain around it. But still, I was like, but then they overtly pointed out in conversation that it's been months. So this is another season, because some seasons they've literally gone the next minute.
The next second, yeah.
This season, it's been months, which allowed the issues with the book and Michael story to exist, you know, and a few other, for Tilly to settle in at the Academy, and probably for a few other things, for Paul to be resentful.
Lost.
Yeah. I like when they do time jumps, although it made sense for seasons 2 and 3 to not do them because of the cliffhangers.
Yeah. Nature. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But also they did an unusually nice job of just weaving that stuff into what was happening.
Yes. Very true.
It was nicely done. Like, it didn't feel, when she says, when Tilly said it's been months since she mentioned him or something like that, it felt like a real part of a real conversation.
Instead of stopping to
not for the audience.
Expository. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting what they've done with the Michael and book relationship. You know, maybe part of it is just to give them an arc again for the season, and maybe just because things should have consequences.
Well, yeah. I mean, he betrayed basically everyone in the galaxy, if you want to think about it.
I liked when he said, you know, I go where the Federation tells me to go, and they told me to come here.
Yep.
Well, it was also a very, you know, optimistic Star Trek kind of punishment that he has to go be helpful.
For the refugees.
That's like, they're not locking him up, because that isn't helpful and wouldn't change anything, but they're having him put his skills to use, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And it leaves room for Saru and Tarina to have their romance, right? Which was so adorable. Those two are just the cutest.
Well, so. I loved when her little thing about, like, don't make me mind meld you. Like, it was so...
Yeah, Vulcans in the 32nd century are definitely wackier than they are.
They're a lot more chill. Yeah. That Romulan stuff is kind of blended over, right? They're sort of blend. Like, yeah.
But there's still elements, like the whole jokey thing at the end. Of course, like all of our podcasts, we don't go in order. But her thing of like, did you just ask me to marry you? And she's like, well, it's the logical thing to do or something. Right. You know, so she got all Vulcan there at the end, you know. So.
Right, right.
I love that she proposed.
Didn't we learn from Strange New Worlds that the woman proposes too? Like, isn't it on her? Didn't we learn that from somewhere in there? That's what they decided at some point. With
maybe
Pring has to choose Spock again or whatever.
Oh, it's quite possible. That's a good callback. I mean, do you guys? I mean, we asked this Michelle Paradise, and she said no. But I feel like they are cribbing from the other shows.
That's okay. I think they are too, but like
not
that's
a bad
fine.
Way.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Like, look, everything, we all know this. Everything is an homage to everything else, especially with something that's been on for over 50 years, right?
I mean, there's the overt stuff, like the synth was obviously, you know, and they mentioned Alton Soong.
Yeah.
That was kind of a fun character.
Because I was thinking about that. I was like, who is he? Like, as far as where does he fit in? Because he's like clearly like Data's nephew, basically. You know what I mean? Like the way he behaved.
Data's nephew? Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah.
When they went to Coppelius, there was a bunch of synths like in the background.
That are more like him. Yeah.
Right. Gold skin, the eyes, all that.
I was just looking it up. I was like, have we seen those? Because I remember a lot of variety on Coppelius. So yeah.
But then they said something like, whoever made him honored Alton Soong as if Soong was dead at that point,
which is really weird because he's the right age. Like, they said he'd been around for a long time. I'm like, he's probably just one of the Coppelius androids. Like, I don't know why that's
they were just speculated he could have been made by Alton Soong.
I mean,
it actually makes more sense if he were
right. I don't know why it needed to be made by, you know, a student of Alton Soong or something. Like, why? He's an android, he can live for as long as he, you know, can physically survive. So
yes.
He was an interesting android. First of all, his name was Fred.
I like that.
Right.
Second of all, he was interested in like buying things and things of value.
That was really interesting.
So that was interesting. And then
where'd that come from?
The smart thing they did was they just made his scene fun. He had great dialogue. And
so I don't know, whoever that actor is did nail being a quirky android. I was like, go you. Whoever.
Yeah. At first I thought, did they put the... Because there were all the bald android copies that went crazy on Mars.
Right.
And I thought, is it that guy in a wig? But it's not. It's a different actor. And I thought he did a great job. He was a fun character. I think I'm wondering if he's on the ship. You know, they blew a hole in him, but I bet you they're going to power him up at some point, you know, or maybe put his head. I mean, I want to see like crazy stuff where like they put his head in a jar or something, you know, and he floats around and talks to them.
I mean, if this was TNG, that's what they do, right? They detach his head and like connect it.
Stamets went off to find, they had a very strange conversation about wires, about this.
Yes, they did. And I thought that was really weird because I was like, they don't really use discrete wires in the 24th century. So what are we talking about?
But even past that, it was like, first they need wires. Then we don't have any wires, so we're going to need many replicators. That's what Culber says.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know.
Many replicators. I was thinking many replicators. And I was thinking, why not just make them out of programmable matter
or whatever?
And then
matter, because they can do everything.
Like, I have a whole bunch of wires. I was like, this is just like Discovery has its own very unique technology that can and can't do.
Well, as we know, the 32nd century technology is not very well defined, like what it can and can't do.
I mean, and it was still like, I liked the moment between them. It was a good scene. And, you know, I agree with you. Like, I think they're obviously going to do something with him. And we know Stamets needs a project. And we know he's and we know he's intrigued, right? He keeps saying the legacy of this. And oh, my God. So we know, like, there's got to be.
That's
it feels
point.
Like there's something there. But then it's also this weird technology explanation that doesn't really work.
The smart tech did something cool in this episode. I know you're not a big fan, Lori, but I liked when at one point Michael was fighting Maul and Locke, and we'll get to them in a second. And she realized her phaser pistol wasn't enough. So she just like made this move and it turned into a rifle, which I thought was pretty cool. But, I, you know, why it did that, how it knew to do that. But whatever. I thought it was cool.
I know. Even the stuff that I think looks great and looks cool, I'm frustrated when I can't come up with how it works.
Practical. Yeah. It doesn't actually make any sense.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always interesting with these first episodes where you don't know, like, was the wire thing? What is a hint of something coming? Like, is the Fred thing setting something up, or the wire setting something up? Like, there was a character that Tilly was flustered around. Like, is that guy going to be a big deal later in the season?
Well, because he liked her and he said he was going to come back.
Yeah, he has a name in the credits. So I think he's a thing.
He's a thing.
Yeah, his name is Lieutenant Jax.
At the very least, he'll be there at the end to toast everyone when they make it back from this.
Well, and also, you're right. Like, there are things that I don't know if it's a thing. Like, when they find Fred, and he's Fred, the android, and he's dead. And Michael says, we have to contact his family. We have to see if he has a family.
Yeah, I heard that. And I was like, what?
You wouldn't, would you just throw that out there for an android if you didn't?
Well, I think because someone probably sometimes I think, like, what was this like in the writer's room? So they show up on a planet, the android dies, and they're like, okay, let's take him. Now, if that was a person, that would be stealing.
Yeah, you'd be stealing something.
That'd be like totally uncool. Right. Yeah. So someone's like, well, maybe we should say something.
Well, and remember, androids have rights. I mean, we know that, and it's been well established. So,
do they have families?
Well, why not? But you adopt people, you know, like, I don't know.
Now, of course, let's say there is a family. And so Mrs. Fred calls them and she's like, dude, where's Fred? Yeah. I want to bury Fred or whatever she wants. And they're like, well, we're busy. We're off in the other side of the galaxy. And we decided to take your husband with us.
I mean, realistically, I think you could rebuild Fred, right? Like, I feel like he's not really dead. Like, they'd be like, we have spare parts.
Wires. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing with the wires.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to talk about Maul and Locke. What I love about...
They're great.
They're obviously the villains. But what was made clear here was they just found this ship because it was there. And they got on board and they were just rifling around the ship. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what was there. In fact, there was the moment where Locke, the guy... was like, let's get out of here. We got two Federation ships, you know, let's cut our losses. And Maul's like, nah, let's roll the dice and see what else we find. And then they found the puzzle box.
Right.
So they weren't looking for it. You know, Kovic has his whole, he knows more than everything. And it's like, he knows this is a big deal.
You might say they're not part of the chase.
Indeed. And so I like that the bad guys aren't, you know, they don't have a big plan. They're making it up as they go along.
Yeah.
And they're just two randos, but they're very smart.
Yeah.
You know, they outsmarted them multiple times. And of course, that was a clever way for them to get Book on the ship and way for, you know, so they had clever ways of how do we get Book back? How do we get Tilly back?
Yeah. I like that Tilly was trying to like crack some code and got, you know, found out, of course.
She was spouting some techno babble about encryption. I don't know. Did it make any sense? Did it sound good to you as a
sound more? Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounded fine. Like, yeah. I'm just glad that they used the correct, like, fake units in the Star Trek world. Because remember, somewhere around the second or third season of TNG, they realized that they should not be calling things megabytes and bytes because. It's going to be so outmoded quickly.
Right.
And so they made up, quads and things like that. And they made up their own, like,
digiquads and all sorts of stuff like that.
So they correctly used, like, a fake measure, you know, of, like, digital unit measure. And I was like, good. Don't say, because everybody has to relearn these mistakes, I feel like. You know what I mean? New writers, like, have to, like, don't say gigabytes. Don't say, like, no. Especially in the 32nd century.
Yeah.
Well, Fred's brain was 15 teraquads.
There you go. See, they remembered to use quads. And I was like, yes, you guys remembered to use quads. Thank you.
Well, I liked when Vance came in and was like, no, everything's nothing to see here. And then basically helped Tilly out. So that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Vance was having enough of Kovach's weirdness because he's
mystery man BS. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Kovach's weirdness, can we talk about the Infinity Room for just a minute? Yeah. Like, I'm so, there are a few things that I was confused by.
That can I just say
what is the bombed. Like, especially because the second time they're in some location, but then they just say end program or whatever.
I didn't notice this until the second time I viewed. So the Infinity Room is a real place, and the way you know that is because Vance hands Michael the little Infinity symbol. Then they show up in the Infinity Room, and so the premise of that is this is the most secure location.
Right.
In the Federation. You know, there's like no way, no scanner, but it's somewhere in the HQ.
Somewhere.
You know, shielded and whatever. And the only way in is that little thing because she hands it to him. So they weren't in a shared projection. She beamed to him. And the second time when she visits him and they're around a... some kind of hologram or something like that. I think she did beam again. That was not the same room. That was not the Infinity Room.
Yeah, that was just his quarters or something.
That was just like just his office or something like that.
But why did he have a hologram? Why did he have a fake environment? Was looking,
because
it's the twin moons, right?
He was looking for the twin moons. Yeah. He knew that clue, but he didn't know what she knew. So she's like, you're looking in the wrong place because he was – standing on a planet with twin moons. Mm-hmm. He was basically sorting through twin moon planets. And she's like, unless you tell me what's going on, you're never going to find this place. Right. So she blackmailed him, and which seems uncool, right, for an officer to do.
No, he liked it. He approved.
Yeah,
he's a weirdo. So he likes stuff like that. And then he gave her back. If you notice, he gave her back the Infinity Key. Yeah. So I think that Infinity Room is going to come back later in the season. Wherever she is in the Federation, she could jump into the Infinity Room if she needs to have a chat with him, and maybe it's going to be important at some point.
It's like a little get out of jail free card in a way. She could just jump there, maybe. Well, okay, so the first thing I thought about the Infinity Room, though, is I literally thought, oh my god, it's the Cone of Silence. Like, it's Get Smart. I just couldn't, really? This is what we're doing? Okay. Like, I just couldn't help but giggle at it.
Back to Maul and Locke, there's an interesting moral thing with them of like how dangerous are they? Because they were referred to as dangerous. But if you look at their rap sheets, neither of them were wanted for murder. Both were suspected of manslaughter. Because, of course, I paused and read the backwards text. And they did kill the guards and kill Fred, but that was Fred had betrayed them, and you know, that was their only way out of that room. And when Reese and Owo, they didn't kill them. They had some kind of paralyzing beam.
Okay, right. By the way, that I loved. That tech was great.
They're not evil.
They did kill Fred vindictively at the end. Like, they shot him, and then they were like, then they're... But they're in love, and it was like a...
Fred started it. Fred was like, you're not getting out of here.
Fred wasn't cool. Yeah, he summoned his, like, security people.
I'm not saying he wasn't asking for it, but I'm saying that's not something like... That's not a Starfleet way to handle something, for example.
No, absolutely, they're not Starfleet.
You can tell they're former couriers, all right.
Right. Yeah, but they're not they're not pure evil.
So, I mean, and so you can make that argument that they're not pure evil pretty much up until they almost commit like a minor genocide of like a small group of people. That's when they sort of cross the line, at least for a minute, wouldn't you say?
I mean, it is a classic villain move of when you want to get away from the good guys.
Right, you give them something to solve, basically.
It's like the Spider-Man movie when you throw someone off a bridge. You know Spider-Man's going to go save
the innocent.
Now, it's not cool. You know, it is somewhat evil.
It is an evil move, yes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Lex Luthor move, admittedly.
Yeah, I was getting it has a Superman vibe.
Yeah, it's a very like comic book villainy like moment. That's okay, but it's just like a
But it worked.
I mean, yeah, they got away, didn't they?
Yeah.
No, and I mean, I think it worked in the story too. Yeah. Like it worked in the episode.
Yeah. What did we think of like just kind of ramming our ships into the sand? That was kind of interesting.
I mean, it's something we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But again, I gotta say, I chuckled because the the Discovery is like a spinning plate, and you just like shoved this like frisbee in the sand kind of thing.
Yeah, it should have just rolled over, right?
Like TV, like whatever.
But the shield doesn't spin. The ship spins.
No, I know. It's fine. Like it works, but
it only spins when it spores.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that they've basically now officially established that like the spore drive could, to give Stamets his kind of problem, is the spore drive is defunct.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Your ship's basically the only ship that's ever going to use it. I
thought that was a little quick to give up on in a way. Like that's kind of silly.
Well, apparently there's they mentioned it last season, this something called a pathway drive, which I think was on the new Voyager.
Right. You know. Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't think they ever explained what it is, but apparently it's pretty cool, right? Yeah. So
it won the engineering, you know.
Maybe not as fast as the spore drive, but it's like quantum slipstream or some other.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what I think of.
Cool, like, made up thing.
Pathway.
Yeah.
So conveniently, Discovery is once again the only ship to ever have the spore drive, which is like, oh, good and bad, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Well, it forces them to be the only ship that could get to the Romulan ship in time, you know, because they sent Raynor in, but on the Antares, which I think is like the fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
Antares. So easily. That's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll see you in an hour because I'm behind you.
Right. So is that they're setting that up for the season where, you know, they go somewhere and he'll always show up later with his ship.
He'd be pissed knowing his personality. He'd be so mad and like so over that if they're not going to do that. But I mean, if they did.
One thing I am worried about, not worried, but so getting back to Maul and Locke, they're not part of a group. They're not civilians, but they have this casual way of talking and they use certain words. You know, they're trying to futurize them and to have slang. Like they use shiny, Firefly.
Like Firefly, yeah. I thought of that immediately.
And I'm like, that was weird. So I just hope that doesn't get annoying if they just throw in a lot of like weird to try to give them their own personality by having all these weird words. It's not a problem yet. These are things I worry about, though.
Yeah, I didn't get worried about that.
I like on this show, you have to pre-worry sometimes.
It's true. It is. Yeah.
So we haven't talked about the big thing. Which everyone, I think, you know, before the season started, everyone's like, there's a big thing in this. I think the big thing is what they revealed in the last 2 minutes. And so what I really appreciate is they found a puzzle box and they opened it up and they told us what the hell is inside.
Yeah. Right.
Thank goodness. Yes.
And they weren't messing around. We talked to Michelle Paradise on the red carpet about that. And she kind of admitted, we wanted to just get right into it. And they really did. I mean, and The Chase is an episode that needed to be followed up and they never did.
Oh, yes. It was begging to have more happen to it. Yeah.
So. It was a good choice.
I think Progenitor, I mean, that's kind of a deep cut. They didn't even use that name. But that was used in the extended universe.
Yeah. So now it's official.
I'm curious where they're going to go with that and how much more 24th century stuff. I mean, what's hilarious is they just grabbed a picture from that episode, and the guy they picked was literally just a background actor in a Romulan costume.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, all the rest of them spoke, so they're like, here's the one guy who didn't say anything.
Right. There was a Romulan captain with an actor. He had lines, but this guy in the background, he was wearing the outfit. And
he's the Romulan scientist. Done.
Yeah. I mean, he was in the episode. He had lines. They've given him a name and he's now a big deal. That's the best kind of retconning. If you want to retcon something to take something like that and make something more out of it.
The other dips into canon that I really liked was anytime they mentioned Jumja sticks, I'm very happy. And they said the cocktails taste like Jumja sticks. Yeah. So that also those cocktails looked so cool. I thought those were very fun. And then the self-sealing stem bolts.
Yep.
Which I know we've had before on Discovery, but it's always fun.
Fred's store probably had all sorts of stuff in it, but there was an old phaser I saw in there. I think, you know, there were some weapons on the wall that I'm sure were something, but they're not doing too much. But the puzzle box thing, they grabbed from Picard, the name of it. And, you know, we did see that in Picard. I like how the new shows are now feeding each other. as well with bits of lore. And of course, the synths themselves.
Yeah. I also think we're adding to cocktail and drinking canon. Because right. Now we know about Andorian champagne. And then I was thinking about the Orion Hurricanes from Lower Decks. So I'm like, somewhere we could put together a good list of new Star Trek drinks, along with Sumerian sunsets and Saurian brandy and those things.
Now, what was it? It was Tonic 2161, right? That was the name of the,
yeah, I think so,
the special Federation drink. I like Drunk Tilly. I think we've seen her drunk before, but she's good at it. Mary's good at it. She's not doing too much just being comic relief, but there, you know, you could see that that's part of her role this season. Because everything else, although, you know, Rayner's kind of funny. I think there's something funny about him.
Well, because he's cranky, but he's not a jerk, right? And that's what makes him good. Like that he's stubborn and he's cranky and he's funny. He said something about like the cherry on the shit sundae.
Yeah.
Which I really liked, but he also is, but he's smart. And when Michael does say, listen, like we can't just have all these innocent people die because we need to get our thing. He's eventually goes, oh, right. No, you're right. You're right.
So did I miss it or did they ever explain what a red directive is?
That was my question for you guys.
Also, how many red things do we freaking need?
Yeah.
Red angels, red directives, red matter, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Now, perhaps they overdid it in the Voyager episode with the Omega Directive, like way too much exposition. But this seemed important.
Yeah.
But they were never really explaining things well to Michael. Like in the Omega Directive, the Prime Directive is superseded. Right. And there was that point where Kovic, you know, where Michael's like, okay, well, there might be some people there. And Kovic's like, do whatever you got to do. Basically, kill as many people as you can.
Yeah, that was super weird.
Well, that certainly implies the same conditions.
Though. Right, but there should be, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're just being too Star Trek-y. You know, it's like, we want to see the screen and we want to see it all written down, like here are the parameters of a red directive. Well, and
I want a book to go, what's a red directive? Like someone who's not in Starfleet he should needs to know. Ask what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
For the rest of us.
Because he implied it's an old red directive, you know, that in theory, the red directives existed back in the 24th century and we just hadn't heard of them. They were so super, they were super duper double secret.
In essence, the chase happens. Some secret group of Starfleet security, like, declares a red directive about that technology. And, you know, that's what they've sort of retconned, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like when they went to Talos IV and there was a special rule after Talos IV. It's that kind of thing where they had to create the special rule after they found out about the progenitors to say, if you ever find this technology or any inkling of it, it's a red directive. But I just want them to spell it out. I'm a nerd. I don't care. I like that stuff.
You just need a sentence, right? You just need a little. See, you know, we're just talking about how they can do exposition very awkwardly and stuff. But here's a case where they really should have thrown us a sentence, right? It's like, just give us a little something.
Is there, you know, because we want to talk about episode two, where some of these things are picked up. So is there anything left from this first episode? Any new character or new beats or anything?
One, I love that they went to a planet with people who all wear the same outfit, because I've really missed that about Star Trek. I love when they go somewhere and everybody more or less dresses the same. So, and I guess it was the sand that made them dress like that.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the sand.
So, but I thought that was great. I get back to the sand. These are my like quickies that I'm throwing at you in our last seconds of reviewing this episode. The sand prevented the transporter from beaming up the
apparently
kid.
Super radioactive sand and stuff.
I just, my notes, I say I'm very confused by this tech. But I was still really happy that they went to a planet. And I also think the theme sort of throughout this was about a very strange New Worlds-y theme, which is we work better all together.
Yes.
We overcome our obstacles as one, as you might sing. But you know, every time they worked together, it went really well. Saru, like when he was on the bridge, he was Captain Saru again, and everybody's doing their thing, and everybody was a really good team. And that was even the point of the two ships coming together. They needed both.
Right.
I thought that was nicely reinforced.
Yeah, I mean, there was another thing happening on that planet, I felt, which is they want to create an Indiana Jones vibe. It was a bit on the nose. It's like,
the bazaar and everything.
Return of the Jedi, too.
Yeah, there was a little tattoo. It's like a half Tatooine.
Yes.
Half Cairo, whatever, you know. I think they kind of nailed it. There was bits of the music that were indie-like as well, but I thought the music was good in this episode. I think those kind of visual and musical cues helped reset us for this new adventure. And of course, they're kind of setting us up like, okay, well, you found a clue and now you know where the next clue is. And that's episode two. So why don't you go off to episode two, Michael? And I'm sure you'll find another clue and that'll be episode three.
Yeah. And the fact that at the end of the episode, she's excited to do what's next instead of what we're used to, which is like, oh, no, now we have to go do some other terrible thing. And I feel like this season, they're like, okay, let's fly because she's dirty and she has blood on her and she's like loving it.
Yep, she's happy. It's all about it.
There was one moment, though, that again sort of exemplifies when I wish Discovery. I'm not a big military rank person, but there's this moment when they're about to go on the mission. And Rayner says to Vance, my mission or hers? And Vance says, why don't you try working together? And I want to be like, I think someone needs to be in charge of a mission like that. Because
technically someone would be, yeah.
That was like, I understand that they wanted to create the situation they created, which was that they were arguing about it and there was no one who could order someone else to do it. But that also, if you're going to go on a mission that's that important, you're going to put someone in charge of it.
Yeah, you appoint someone. Yeah,
I agree. But since Vance is my boy, I will never say a bad thing about him. So I will say that this was a test for them. So he did that on purpose to see what would happen and see how they handled it and see if they found a way to work together. And because he's got, maybe there's some certain issues with him or with her. And he wants to kind of see what happens.
Maybe like five times over that they've known each other a long time, Vance and Rayner. And he likes Rayner. So, like, I think he's trying not to step on him too much, too, you know?
Right. But separate from, like, your, you know, interpersonal relationships.
Oh, no, I agree.
Going on a big, important mission.
You're
and it was like, who's in charge? You would pick some. That's all. But everything that we got, because there was no one in charge, I enjoyed. So that's like what Discovery does to me every time.
Yeah. So solid, good season premiere.
Yep.
Yeah. Excited to see more.
All right. Well, I think it's time we started talking about Discovery episode 502, now that we've covered 501.
Under the Twin Moons.
I would have called it Action Saru, but that's just me.
Right.
Well, I feel like the title ties into the theme. Kind of, you know, because it's two moons and this episode seems to be about second chances. That's kind of the theme of the episode. So I feel like the title fits with that.
And there are a lot of pairs in it now that I think about it.
It's a lot of pairs too. Yeah, exactly.
Matt, why don't we start with you? What's your overview of the episode?
I really liked it. I know we've gone back and forth about do you like one or two, you know, 501 or 502 more. And it's hard to actually make that call, especially because, you know, they're going to be released on the same day. So you're going to see them back to back. But yeah, I really liked 502. It was, like I said, hard call to be like, oh, one is better than the other. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked all the Action Saru moments. Because we had forgotten about that since season two, basically, that Saru had all these abilities. So it was fun to see.
I agree. I still like the first one a little bit better, but this one is a better character episode. I think this one, the first one sets up the season well. This one sets up everybody's character arcs well, which we'll get into more later, but it's a really good episode for the characters. And so if you really love all of these characters, you'll probably end up liking this one more. And I get that. And when they did the character moments, they blended pretty well. They, you know, as for the most part.
Yes.
There's one.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
I mean, they can't help themselves.
They mostly didn't stop the whole thing. Yeah.
But yet the plot still progresses. We learn more about the bad guys. We learn a little bit more about the big quest. And importantly, it's a self-contained episode. You know, we go to an alien world and shenanigans happen and all that. You know, even though we get two episodes on the same day, they don't feel like a two-parter. They're two separate episodes.
Right.
Yeah, very much so. I preferred the second one because the first one had to do all the heavy lifting of setting up the season. So I liked this one better, which I felt like it was also set up because it's setting up, I think it's setting up, here's how each episode is going to play out. We're going to go to a new place. We're going to get a new piece. So I thought that was a smart way to do the season. So it made me look forward to the rest of the episodes. I thought it was filmed really nicely. Everybody had something to do. And except for the one moment that I'm sure we're all agreed on, everything moved really well as they were getting pieces of information and doing their sciencing or their adventuring, whatever they had to do. Most of the character stuff was coming through that really beautifully.
Agreed.
And we got a better sense of our new season regular, Rainer. And he was really good in this episode, Callum Keith Rennie. I'm a fan of his. The episode was bookended with his story. In a way, this episode's kind of about him, maybe, even though it's also kind of about Michael and Saru.
Yeah.
And, well, and their
that second chances theme.
Yeah.
It's almost setting up what it's going to be about. For, it sets up the stakes, or rather the arcs, for like Tilly, Adira, Michael, Book, Saru, and Rainer in a big way.
Yeah, and because it's Discovery, it often literally just like says what it's going to be, you know. And in some of these cases, you know, Michael's like at the beginning, she's like, I don't know, you know, I used to be all about the mission, but now I'm looking for something new, you know, and maybe this search is going to be it. And Book is everyone is a little lost, except of course for Culber, who's just breezing through the season, but everyone else is in search of something, but Book is especially. And so this possible family connection to Maul is interesting. That could be his thing for the season. Although I still think, as I've said in a previous podcast, and I think this episode hinted at it, that he's destined to join Starfleet eventually. In fact, Book, Saru said you should get a first officer like Book.
Yes. Which was a little eye rolling, but yeah.
But I feel like that's for sure. I mean, you never know with the show what's foreshadowing or not. But I think that's where that is going.
Yeah, well, they set it up in a lot of places. Vance helped set that up, too. Like, he's been, you know, he's doing such a great job and everybody's so happy. And he's understanding. Book feels a sense of duty and responsibility that he probably didn't have so much before because he was working on his own.
Yeah.
But you could tell he misses his courier life with Michael, because when he was talking about Maul and Locke and saying like they're having fun and they're in love and they're living for the thrill. And obviously that was bringing him back to his days, his year with Michael.
Yeah, big time.
They broke up in episode one, and this episode had a bit of the kind of, it's kind of a little awkward for us to be together. That's going to get a little old if they keep on playing on that, you know, so it was fine here, I think. When she gave him little mouse toy.
That was a great scene where she gave him the little mouse toy.
I just hope it isn't this kind of constant, are they going to get back together or not, every episode kind of thing.
I didn't feel that. I didn't feel the will they, won't they. I mean, it's in my mind because I just really want them back together. But in that scene in particular, I thought it covered, they managed to cover sort of how they are going to be with each other and the story points at the same time in a really good balance, which is something this show, as we know, struggles with. And this episode was one of the best ones for being able to accomplish those things at the same time.
What I liked about this episode is that it's a visit to the planet, but there's all sorts of stuff happening on the ship, and it's very well integrated.
Yes,
definitely.
Especially Tilly, they made it clear that she is a science specialist on loan, but she's going back to the academy, which takes her out of the running for first officer.
Which is good.
Yeah. Also, her, sorry, I love you, Tilly, but past performance.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not up to that.
Sorry.
That's not her thing now.
Yeah.
We're kind of now seeing this new, more confident Tilly, but she's still funny. She still has some good lines. So I'm liking the new Tilly.
Yeah, she has more confidence.
I think they're forced into that because Adira is the young kind of lost character. She can't be that anymore.
Right. And now we have a sense of her big mission that she's trying to figure out is how to make her cadets understand like the purpose and the mission. And I assume like the belief in the Federation and all of that stuff versus just the practical tasks is what she's been talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Can't crash them on an ice moon every time, right?
Right.
Speaking of the sciencing stuff, I was kind of interested and surprised to see Raynor insert himself in the middle of that. And, you know, and I was wondering, like, oh, crap, where is that going to go? Right. And then it was actually incredibly helpful. Like, it, again, it goes back to showing, like, yeah, he's not just kind of like a contrarian, like, shit disturber. He has stuff to offer, right? So he popped up and was actually quite helpful. The whole, like, picture yourself, like, picture what an ancient Primelian would have for technology. Because they're looking through modern tech or, you know, somewhat modern tech and not coming up with anything. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that work out.
And I thought it made sense that they wouldn't have thought of it. And I thought it made sense that he did think of it because of who he is. And it established that you could see him as a captain being good with his crew. But the one thing I was wondering was like this monitoring business.
Yeah. Like, he just popped in.
Is he, what exactly is he monitoring? Like those two and their personal conversation? Who's, is someone sending reports? Like,
there's a lot of questions around that. It's definitely a plot device, unfortunately.
I mean, they did explain that a bit by saying, well, this is a red directive. I've been on a ton of these, you know, I've been around the block. I know, you know, I'm the old hand who knows what's going on.
It doesn't explain just how snoopy he is.
Like, yeah, what was he monitoring specifically?
How did he know what was going on like that moment?
Well, he was probably monitoring what was happening on the planet, and you can't ignore keeping track of Adira and Tilly, who are kind of the support team for what's happening on the planet. This is all making it clear that even though he's been asked to retire, he can't let it go. That he's, you know, he's going to stay on mission, which was the point made at the end of the episode. But yeah, no, it's still unclear. Like, it's like, well, you know, how many red directives have you been on? It's still like, what the hell is a red directive?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, what is it? Well,
there's been, you've and been on seven of them? Many. Yeah. So it's not like the Omega directive where it's like, I mean, almost never happens.
Yeah, it sounds like it's supposed to be an exceptional event, though, kind of like the Omega directive, but apparently not, right? Apparently it's like all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in Starfleet for, he said, 30 years. He's run point on four of them.
I
mean,
yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, sure. You know, whatever. Yeah. They'll probably never explain it to us.
No. We're just supposed to take it at face value.
The Saru and Michael stuff on the planet was, I thought, really good. That this is when they mixed the character and the action and the plot together well.
Except when they stop. I actually loved all the stuff between them, so I hate complaining about this because I thought it was really nice. I loved their conversation. But first, they're walking as if they are strolling and they got nowhere to go. Like their pace is very slow.
Yeah.
And then they literally stop.
I agreed that it was a bit of a walk in the park when they are on mission, but at least they were mostly moving. I guess I took that as a win.
And if you step back a little, I thought the pacing and the setup of the planet, of landing there and it's so quiet and peaceful, and the buildup of the danger, all that pacing was actually great. Like it worked really nicely, cutting back and forth, all that stuff. It was just when they stopped, I was like, aren't you guys on some kind of a deadline?
Yeah. And they had to hoof it, pun intended for Saru. They had to hoof it quite a distance, right? Because he had to be outside the shield or whatever. So you really shouldn't stop for too long.
I mean, this is one of the episodes where they have to explain because of the amazing transporters, you know, why aren't they using them, you know, because of this EM field, which kind of became an important thing for the episode. So I thought that was good how they explained that. Obviously, the drones gives you Arsenal of Freedom vibes.
Yeah, but just a little bit. Didn't really bother me. Yeah.
I mean, I would, you know, this is another one of those things where they're like, this is a fascinating, ancient, interesting culture that we'll never hear about again, I'm sure. But
we have heard of the Primelians before. Picard was obsessed with them as an archaeologist. This is the species that laid the booby trap in the episode Booby Trap.
Oh,
I hadn't made that connection.
So, yeah, that's why it's awesome that once again they're finally connecting back to, just like in the whole Chase connection, they're doing a good job reconnecting to bits of Trek lore.
You know, we don't get closed caption on these things, so it's really hard to tell when they're throwing out names of Star Trek names of things. Well done, yeah,
because
Matt.
They're super ancient. They were a very ancient race that was already extinct, even by the 24th century.
Yeah, good job, Matt, because I didn't know either. And it's funny because earlier in the week, Tony was talking, we're on Slack, and he was saying, like, I want to know more about them. And I didn't initially feel that way, but I was thinking about it. And I was like, well, I would like to know why they set up this crazy, elaborate system, if nothing else. Yeah. But that is some extra information. So thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, kudos to them, because now we've seen, like, a Promethean outpost somewhere.
Here's some tech question, which no one will be able to answer. But so they have these, I guess there's like bracelets or something that they could turn into anything. They're like, be a phaser, be a phaser rifle, right? Yeah. Even though they don't have to say it, as we said before.
They don't have to say it out loud.
Just start tugging on it.
Bam, but then they could leave. So then they left their two phasers in the statue to blow it up. But then boom, they got two new ones.
I wondered about that too. I was like,
how much can they make? Like, you know, is there a limit? So,
there definitely should be, because, you know, programmable matter still needs raw material somehow. So
there was another thing of in the end when they were like, you know, Zara, can you make a programmable matter thing from the diagram in the book? And how did, I mean, I guess because she's super smart, but before they realized it fits into the thing they found.
Yeah.
How did she know to make it that size?
Well, that's the other thing. There's a lot of questions about that. Because they know a two-dimensional image.
There were specs in the document.
It didn't look like there were specs.
But I decided there were specs. Maybe they're on another page.
Okay.
All I saw was a two-dimensional like graphic that she somehow decided arbitrarily to make give a height, like a Z-axis to, which, how did you know that? You know?
Specs. Yeah. They're on the next. I swear to God, they're on the next page.
They're on the next page.
I swear to God.
Exactly.
Well, it makes sense. But then of course, set up the like, oh, look, it's five pieces. Well, there you go. Four more episodes at least. Yeah. Which is fine. You know, we know that's what the season is. And that's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. I also have to say that was quite clever the way they integrated the hidden text. And well, both hidden because it had been degraded over time, but also hidden working in the new lore from like Picard season one about what we know about Romulan society, that they would have a hidden door. So there must be another, you know, hidden piece to the message. And of course, on its face, it kind of looks like maybe you're talking about telepaths like Beta Z. And then, you know, Action Saru shoves the giant thing over and nope. Actually, they're probably describing Trills, which is pretty. I mean, then it's kind of eye rolling. Oh, right, because there's this gray character
we need to check in.
I would say the gray conversation with Adira and Tilly was a little like, is now the time for us to have this conversation situation? But they kind of had to remind the audience, oh, Gray's on Trill. They've kind of broken up.
Yeah, and conveniently now they have to go to Trill.
Apparently that's the next episode.
That's the next one.
And I think they had that conversation before all hell broke loose.
They had it when they
so much during the attack.
I mean, Michael and Saru were on the planet in their tactical gear. Everyone should be focused on not getting killed in the ancient graveyard.
I mean, it's a little exposition. It is what it is. Yeah.
It was fine. In general, the stuff with Adira and Tilly was cute. There was some humor there. There were little, you know, fun little bits of humor. I like when Michael says to Saru something about missing the wedding and he says, you know, that would be grave. And, you know, she thought that was a pun. I thought it was a pun.
I'm so looking forward to the wedding. By the way, I'm not I don't usually care about wedding scenes and things or weddings in general, but like this wedding, I hope we get to see.
They better. There's going to be a lot of finger touching, you know, and
forehead touching, finger touching.
Yeah, the whole thing, right? Because the forehead touching is a Kelpian thing. The finger touching is a Vulcan thing. We can get all kinds of little symbolic touching.
Are they going to invite any of those, like, what are they called? The Baku, the kind of creepy black oily Baku people?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, they're all kumbaya now.
Yeah. While we're talking about Saru, let's talk about Action Saru for a minute, because first of all, I kept thinking, I hope they make an action figure and I hope it shoots quills. And I'm glad I don't have little kids that I'd have to be chasing after the quills after it shot them.
Yeah.
But but I loved Action Saru. We got to see him doing his super running, which I really missed because I love when he runs fast. Mm-hmm. And the shoot, like, first of all, those quills can destroy those drones. That was pretty impressive. Like,
since when can these quills, like,
yeah, they could get through skin, but they could blow up.
They're supposed to be for, they're supposed to be on,
They're impressive. And of course, the question is, why didn't he use them earlier? But whatever, you know.
Well, like I said, they seem to have forgotten about all these things after season two. They introduced them on season two and just haven't.
Well, he used them in season three in a big action scene.
Wait, did he? Oh, okay.
And he used his supervision because he could sense the bioluminescent bacteria writing from the...
But he hasn't used that for like two seasons, so...
Yeah. Yeah, no, so they're remembering like, oh, right, he's an alien. It used to be fun. Every episode, they'd introduce a new feature.
We used to call it Saru Ability Watch.
Yes.
I'm sure there's still more. They should... I hope they throw a couple crazy ones at us. Like, oh, I could do this. Well, and I never told you.
I still want to see him do a donkey kick again, because that was pretty crazy. Remember he did that in season one? Yeah, and it was like, whoa.
It's a great episode for him where apparently he's just been replaced as first officer. Although I'm questioning why they are going to keep his quarters as a Kelpian swamp.
I thought that too. I was like, oh, he's welcome back anytime. Well, what does that tell you? I feel like.
Doesn't Raynor want, how long would it take to clean out Saru's quarters though?
Seems like they have other quarters because you don't see a lot of background people on that ship.
No. Discovery has a lot of
empty rooms on that ship.
Yeah. And I loved when he said, I will also advise you to not touch the swamp kelp while it is in bloom. But I mean, I'm a little worried about Saru leaving because I love when they have a crew member who has some kind of crazy super abilities. Like they always, you know, every Star Trek show has someone around with some kind of crazy abilities nobody else has. So I don't think that leaves us with anyone.
Well, Raynor is an alien and we knew very little about them because they were only in one episode. So who knows what they're capable of?
I still think Saru comes back and like helps save the day somehow. Is what's going to happen.
Oh, he'll be back on the ship eventually, but will he? I don't think he's going to be. I think he's going to take the job of ambassador.
No, not, I just mean he'll come help save the day somehow at the end of the season.
For sure. It's not a great episode for Stamets. I just don't know where they're going with Stamets this season. Yeah,
I don't think Stamets knows where he's going, and they don't seem to know either. You know, it's like, oh.
Yeah, and he was the only one who was by himself trying to figure things out.
Right. And then Book came in to use the dark web, or what did they call it? But it was, he was essentially on the,
dark comms, I think, or something.
Yeah.
A secret courier like network, basically. Yeah.
And then we got our old cranky Stamets getting everyone, get out! Just tells everyone to get out. Doesn't give a shit about what they're doing.
And why was that even necessary, to be honest? But whatever. So he was just like, get out.
And he referred to his lab as engineering, which bugs me.
Yes. So the science lab apparently is where Tilly and Adira were. And then now we just have to accept that's engineering now, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that was a bonus science lab they made in season two. That's right. But that's not the,
Well, it's his science. It was his science lab. I mean, they never showed anymore just because. Why bother? But every time they spore, he has to go in the chamber, right?
Yep.
I think the last one, they kind of show him walking out of that general area or something, but I think they're just they're no longer bothering showing us the whole intricate, spore jumping Stamets plugging in.
Yeah. It doesn't matter anymore.
He and Book are the only ones who could do it, right?
Yeah.
If those two aren't on the ship, that ship is pretty much useless.
Well, it can still... Go, it can still travel. It just can't.
It spore. Has a warp drive.
It can't spore jump.
Yeah.
I liked when Raynor's looking at Discovery, looking at the ship, and says they don't make them like that anymore. And I'm like, right, because it was made 900 years ago.
Why would they? They're more pointy back then. Of course, they actually weren't more pointy back then, but this one is.
Yes.
Yeah, this one was, or whatever.
But I did, all the scenes with Michael and with Michael Burnham and Rayner were great. That scene with them, the court, the trial scene or whatever that was, the hearing at the very beginning, their dynamic is so good. The fact that she respects him, even though he did things she didn't like, and that he obviously respects her, is setting up such an interesting dynamic that I'm looking forward to seeing more of. I'm
very interested to see how he works as second officer. Well, first officer, second in command.
She didn't want to rat him out for sure. I mean, that scene kind of surprised me because when you're watching episode one and Rayner does make that decision that she disagrees with, but it didn't feel like he was making a career ending decision to me at the time. It just seemed like they had a disagreement and that was that.
Yeah. And I don't think it would be if this was in isolation, but it's obvious that he's kind of a hotshot rogue and has been out of control a while.
He's having trouble adjusting to the way things have changed. Right,
the post-burn.
Right, yeah, they've made that very clear. He's kind of an old battle axe who doesn't know how to get along in the new post-burn.
Which is why they didn't court-martial him. They just said, look, take retirement. Like, you're out of date.
But it still felt like, I think in episode one, they could have made it clear when he made that decision, like, you're violating this directive or that, like it should have been a bit clear that there were going to be consequences and that he was deciding to do it anyway.
I'm not sure he knew there were going to be consequences to the level that there were. This seems to be Vance deciding that, look, he's just too out of touch. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's more the president, but yeah.
The president, which, by the way, that's still very concerning. This, we brought this up back in season four too. Like, since when does the civilian president start pulling all kinds of strings with Starfleet?
I mean, this smaller Starfleet,
it actually makes sense in this
era, but yeah, they were a ragtag operation holed up in their one space building. So yeah, there was some interesting world building, but I think as the Federation reestablishes itself, yeah, there should be a civilian government. Starfleet should,
yeah.
Starfleet Academy, as we've recently learned, will be on Earth again. But they dropped a couple of clues, which you never know. Again, are these important or not? But they mentioned Breen infighting. Is that going to be a thing?
Yep, and the Orions also
could be throwaway lines. I have a feeling they're not. I think one or both of these is going to come back later.
Sure.
I was trying to figure out, is this to show that he's living in the past or to show that he knows what's going on? And I think it's to show that he knows what's going on.
Well, he sees threats. He's like, he's looking, what's the next war? Whereas they're looking to establish the peace, he's getting ready for the next war, whatever that is.
Right. And I agree with you. I think that something from that will come back.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be gallivanting all around the galaxy and then not, by mistake or whatever, run into, say, a Breen conflict, right? It's going to happen if you're trying to find all these puzzle pieces.
Well, especially because now on the board is this huge technology. So other players are going to eventually make a play for it. You could only assume that
as soon as because, the rumor mill spreads what it is.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Maul and Locke now know what it is. They are no longer trying to sell the diary. They are now trying to get the technology to sell to someone, because they obviously don't want it for themselves. You know, they're just them. You know, that's the thing that, is kind of cool about this episode is that made it clear these two are just out having fun and making cash. That's their deal. And they're smart and they're good at it.
Yeah.
They beat them to the planet. They just didn't know to move the rock.
Right.
So are they going to go blow up? That's an interesting thing. They said they're not generally violent, although they can be violent. They're not going to go kill everyone on Beta Zed, but
yeah, the technology we saw them have in the last episode was like those fun bubble things that they put the crew in. So that's like, not a weapon of someone who wants to kill everybody. And then we know now there's some connection between Maul and Book.
And that Locke is a quote unquote mystery.
Yes.
They opened the puzzle box last episode and said, here's the big mystery. But this episode, they started throwing us some new little mysteries like what's up with Maul? What's up with Locke? He's a thing. It's probably going to be important, whatever he is, that kind of stuff, which is good. You don't want to have no mystery, but you don't want to have the what's the bird mystery. that carries you into the last episode, and then you're like, really?
Yeah. I have to say, it is really interesting that Locke is an unknown species, considering we're talking about the 32nd century, and they know lots about the galaxy at this point and different right. species.
Well, they don't even know if that's his name. Could be a hybrid of some kind. But yeah, that, you know, like, is he from another galaxy? Who knows? But it doesn't seem like he has some secret agenda from another galaxy. He probably doesn't know what he is either, maybe.
No, I don't think he knows what he is. Yeah, exactly.
They need that device from Star Trek Prodigy.
I know.
They all went in and had themselves scanned to find out what species they were.
Well, too that's bad what that, I was that station blew up, right?
Yeah.
Oops. I mean, they essentially did that at some point by scanning them, right, with the 32nd century TRICOM stuff, and they couldn't identify him.
Right.
I was surprised Fred didn't come back. Like, they mentioned Fred.
I think they got what they needed from him.
I was kind of hoping, like, they would talk to Fred.
That would be funny. I really hope they do.
I feel like because they did plant that seed and, we're getting wires. Remember the whole thing about the wires?
Yeah, the wires.
So maybe...
Or that's just nothing. They thought it was a funny throwaway thing. You know,
yeah.
They do that too, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, the other piece of little world building info drop, I thought was about the sand on the outside of the ship, because Saru said that it has unknown radiative properties.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a real pain to get off, apparently.
Yes. At some point, some like evil aliens are going to fire on them and it's not going to work, or it's going to have a weird.
Yeah, integrated with the hull, and there you go. Yeah.
Or, yeah, someone's going to use a tractor beam, but it'll interact with the sand in such a way that everyone on board, like, switches gender or something. You know, it's just...
They don't have time for those asides in this season.
This is the second time you've brought up switching gender.
Lately. Well, that's a Futurama episode.
There's a, in those old collections of Star Trek books, like the short story collections, one I read, New Voyages, that's like, there were two of them way back when I was a kid. And one of them has everybody switching genders. Like
Kirk, it's a thing. There was a comic book, I forget when, that did that in the Kelvin comic book kind of stuff from like 5+ years ago. They did that. I think it's a common trope in a way of like, well, what happens if we flip flop them through some sci-fi reason?
My bet is that there's an episode called Lagrange Point, which we know is going to have that they go to some weird place. So maybe this stuff protects the ship and allows them to go to this some weird zone between the two black holes or something that has interesting properties, and no one else can follow because they have this space sand. Who knows? But that felt like they mentioned it for a reason.
Yeah.
Even though the dots were cleaning it off the ship, but they missed a spot or something.
They were having trouble, they said.
They're having
it
trouble
was difficult.
With it too, so yeah. I think it's in there.
Yeah. There are a couple of other good moments I just want to bring up, like things that I thought really popped, which was I thought Michael and Book in their first scene together, that was really nice. And I liked, like, Culber hugs Book. Book was not ready for that hug, like was surprised by it, which I liked. And when Culber's like, how are you doing? And Book's like, oh, I went here and I went there. and Culber's like, no. Like, that was, I thought, a very strong scene and still about something, because they immediately turn their attention to the task at hand.
Yeah.
And I also loved that moment at the very end when Michael's talking to Rayner and, he says, I'm not a yes man or whatever. And she's like, and then he just zips up his uniform, which is his way of saying, all right. I'm in.
He's in. Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice.
I mean, all of those were great. Lots of great moments. A consistent theme. I think a solid episode. Standalone and a solid episode for the big arc. So if you like character stuff, you got something. If you like action, you got something. If you're curious about the big plot, you still get something. They're not dragging it out.
And one really great line from Michael that was said at the beginning, which I thought was... I feel like it's so relevant in everyday life, which is, I think the world is bigger than our own corner of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So lots of good stuff in this episode. Like, it was packed with, some things we like to make fun of, but mostly really great.
Mostly good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite line was Tilly saying, we will keep our eyes peeled, which is kind of disgusting when you think about it.
Yeah.
And they brought it up again later. So
yeah.
Maybe this is an important plot point that's going to come into
it. Someone's going to have to peel their eyes. That's what Rainer's special ability is.
Gross.
All right. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Two episodes. Great start to the season.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very enjoyable start.
They're doing what they said they were going to do. They've pivoted. They've reformatted. And it's come back better than before.
Yep. Well, so that's it for this week. Next week, we will review episode 3 when they go to Trill. Matt, thank you so much for joining us for this. You made it a lot of fun.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're welcome back anytime, disco or not.
All right. See you next time.